Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Thursday morning. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. As we do every Thursday morning at 8 o'clock, we head to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our friend Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, fresh off being harassed by Joe Rex Road on our own personal text line. Charles, good morning. How are you?
And not responding.
Yeah, what's up with that?
Joe's like panicking. Sorry, man, I was on the phone.
Well, just, you better have like. Have you got some breaking news for us from your phone conversation?
No, Joe, I have another job. I was just gathering stuff for a story I'm working on. I apologize for
how dare you? How dare you?
Just absurd that you would want to work. So, yeah. Charles, we were talking about some rule change proposals that the Lions have thrown out there, including the elimination of an automatic first down after illegal contact and holding penalty, which I just think is stupid. The other one of the playoff format, where it would basically be like the division winner with the best record would get the number one overall seed, and then you just kind of go by record after that in each conference.
Yeah, I kind of like that.
What do you make of those two things thrown out there by the Lions and the legs that they may or may not have?
Well, the eliminating the automatic first down for defensive holding and illegal contact is what you do when you have two rookie corners in 2024 who commit a multitude of penalties, and you're one of the worst in the league when it comes to that problem. That helps the Lions pretty quickly. That's just, gerrymandering some rules to help improve a part of your defense that's sagging. I don't think that'll get any traction. I'm curious, though, to see about the idea of the playoff seeding, where it basically eliminates the idea of division winners automatically getting a home playoff game. And I think, that's born out of Detroit going into the 18th game of the season, or excuse me, the week 18 of the season, the 17th game of the season against the Vikings, and saying, if we lose this game, we're going to have basically a dominant record in the NFC, and we're going to end up going on the road to play a playoff game. And it's just, I think they thought that was absolutely ridiculous. And this crops up every once in a while when we see a division winner where they have a losing record, or just a completely atrocious when compared against other teams in their conference record. If you're winning a division nowadays and you're going 9-8 and then you're hosting a home playoff game, I think a lot of teams think that that's archaic at this day and age. But the argument amongst other teams is there has to be some kind of reward for winning your division. That has to mean something in the NFL, and you should be rewarded for winning your division. So I'll be curious to see. I don't think it'll pass. It comes up and you hear the arguments, and it's not like it's a new debate. But I do think that there's some merit to getting beyond this idea of, simply winning, particularly if you're in a weak division, simply winning a weak division and then being able to host a playoff game when you have a team like the Vikings last year who, lose in week 18. I think, what were they, 14-3? What was the Vikings?
They won 14 games.
Yeah, you win 14 games, and then you have to go on the road to Los Angeles. You get butchered on the road against the Rams. And I think the Vikings, at the very least, thought that was tremendously unfair. The Lions would have thought it was tremendously unfair had they lost that game. And, so there will be some teams that will agree with it. I just don't know that it'll have enough backing across the league to change what's been something that's obviously been a staple. I'm curious, what do you got? I mean, do you look at that and do you say, well, we have to change with the times, teams with the best records should automatically, get the corresponding seeds aside from, obviously the team that finishes number one in the conference?
I think so. I think they should do it. I mean, because again, really? Like Robbie brought up like the Seahawks 7-9 division, where some divisions suck,
yeah.
man.
Yeah.
And so that's, they get to play each other and prop up their records with, you know, with the six games against the other teams in this crappy division. And some divisions just happen to cycle into like these three dominant teams. I mean, I think your best, you know, overall, you know, if you perform that much better than another team, how do they host you in a playoff game?
Yeah, it's real. I mean, I remember, what was the year? Remember when Brady tore his ACL and Castle came in? I think they won 11 games. I think they won 11-5.
They did. Yeah.
The Patriots, and they didn't make the playoffs. And I remember that year. It was just like, this is a joke. Like, people were like, this is a complete and total joke that Bill Belichick and an 11-5 team can't, you know, make the playoffs because of ultimately how the seeding works.
I think that's taking it a step too far, because I don't think that playoff spots should be taken away from division winners. That's what you would be talking about in that scenario, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's,
you know,
it's I mean, I think that's how you have to hash this out. Is, I mean, if you really were to affect how the seeding changes, you can't eliminate. But Joe, you just said it yourself, though. If a team wins a division, you know, obviously it's not going to happen 7-9 anymore. But let's say it's 8-9. If a team wins a division at 8-9, what do you do then when you get to the point where, okay, you're going to
give them a playoff spot? I still give them a playoff spot, but they're seeded by their record. Yeah, I think that's a compromise, right? I mean, I think that's fair.
Yeah, but I mean, what? Okay, so you have an 8-9 team, and then you have a team that has a winning record. Let's say it's a 10-7 team, and you're sitting there staring at it. You're going, well, the 10-17, they're going to get lopped off. They're not going to make it because they didn't win their division, but we're going to put the 8-9 team into the playoffs. I mean, aren't you effectively undercutting your own argument? Because you're saying,
no, I'm drawing a line somewhere. Look, if they want to get rid of divisions, get rid of divisions. You know, I mean, but while they have them, I still
football, right. I mean,
I still feel like there should be. I think it's fair to have a reward for your winning your division, which is you're going to be in the playoff, and then sometimes that's going to happen. But what we're talking about is, you're talking 10-7, 8-9. What we're talking about is 14-3 and potentially 8-9, and then 8-9 hosts 14-3, right? Like, that to me can be fixed. But that's just how I feel. I don't know, Robbie. How do you feel?
No, I'm totally with. I think the reward, like, if teams are worried about the reward is you automatically get a playoff spot. I think the hosting a home game needs to be looked at.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I mean, I don't disagree with that compromise. I just I think the spirit of it, although it's not expressly stated, is, you know, you should be rewarded for your record, and not necessarily just winning your division, but you're still rewarding people. You're still prioritizing winning the division over a record if you get to a point where you have a bad team.
That's true.
Not a bad team, but you have a mediocre division. Somebody wins a mediocre division, and then someone who's, you know, like, let's look at the NFC North last year. I mean, it was a bloodbath. It was horrible. The top three teams between Detroit, Minnesota, and Green Bay, I mean, they beat the crap out of each other, right? And, you know, what if Green Bay, you know, what if you have a team that gets left out in that scenario for somebody from the NFC South? No offense to the NFC South, but, right, you know, obviously historically not been the greatest stronghold of a division the last couple of years. I mean, I hear you. You do have to, I suppose I understand you do have to draw a line. I think you get into these meetings and it's really hard historically to change, you know, something like that. And I think the argument that ends up happening is someone says, okay, well, great, your division's up here. You know, Detroit, you have the NFC North is dominant. Like, we get it. We understand where you're coming from. But guess what? You've had down years. The NFC North's been horrible, pitiful before, and it all evens out in the long run. You know, you're going to have some years where you host a playoff game, or a team in the NFC North is going to host a playoff game, and your division's weak. This is just how it goes. So, relaxed.
So, Charles, we're talking receiver options for the Titans, and we see Stephon Diggs meeting with Vrabel up in Foxborough. That sounds like an interesting pairing. On him in particular, because, I mean, it's – or anybody out there that you think maybe is being undervalued at that spot right now? The Titans have to do something. But also Diggs in particular. Do you feel like there's enough game there and maybe it possibly a humbling a little bit there with him that he could end up being one of those signings that actually next year turns into like a comeback player of the year type dude?
Yeah, I mean, I will say this. When you talk to people inside the Texans, he was not disruptive in any way. I think they were very, very happy with what he brought to the table. And I was there. It was funny because it was their first couple of practices. And you could see, I mean, he's that guy. He brought a ton of juice to practice. You know, all the wide receivers really gravitated toward him. And obviously, it's not like, look, Nico Collins is an all-pro level wide receiver for the Texans. Tank Dell, you know, very high thought of, obviously, season-ending injury last year. But you could see the other wideouts really lift, and there was, you know, you just see guys compete. You see juice that just gets added to a group, and that was clear. And, you know, he was – I think things were going not perfectly for the Texans, but they were definitely doing better until, you know, he suffered the season-ending injury. I don't know, though – coming off that, I don't know, like, what does that look like now? He's 31 years old. I don't know when he turns 32, but he's up there. And when you suffer a season ending injury, you start to lose some edge, as a wideout. Where do you ultimately fit? I mean, you look at the Patriots, what do they have? Right. I mean, the Patriots they have almost nothing at wide receiver. So to me, it makes sense to trend in that direction with him because you have to make some kind of additions. And despite the fact they have a lot of money, these are going to be a lot of bargain basement sort of additions at this stage. But look, I still think he has something to add to a team. I don't know how he will function. Remember, the Texans, obviously, very talented team, not a bottom dweller. I don't know how he functions on a really bad team. I don't know how he functions with a really young quarterback that he's got to bring along. Not that Stroud isn't a young quarterback, but he's got a lot of polish, right? We know that about Stroud. Also, I don't know how he functions when he goes into an environment where he's unquestionably drawing attention as the number one receiver on a roster. He was not with Houston. I mean, he's, you know, facing singled up coverage because of the fact that, you know, Collins is drawing the extra safety attention. You know, even Dell is a guy that I think was drawing more attention away from Diggs. So, you know, I still think he has something to offer to an NFL team. I just don't know what that looks like at this point in his kind of career arc. He's not just on the back nine. I mean, the guy's, he's heading to the clubhouse, like it's, especially after that injury. So it's tough right now with wide receivers. There's just everybody you look at, there's, you know, Keenan Allen, a ton of age, Amari Cooper. It's just a group where you see a lot of age and you wonder, what can we continue? Kind of an interesting one. You know, Elijah Moore is what, 20? I mean, he's like 25. Yeah. Like he's in mid 20s. And when he came free, and the Browns were able to get their hands on him. I remember there were a number of NFL teams that were like, man, you know, really wish we could have gotten our shot at him. They felt like the Jets kind of ruined him a little bit and that there was still a lot to work with there. And then he went into the Browns offense. And I remember that first preseason, he looked like a world beater. Like you're like, oh my God, this guy's going to be, you know, one of the best, like slot type receivers in the NFL this year, and then he was just ruined. Like Deshaun Watson was horrible. Everything went wrong for him, and he kind of went off a cliff. But he's the one where you're like, all right, he's young. He was highly thought of at one point, went through two really horrible situations with the Jets and you know, Zach Wilson, and then with the Browns and Deshaun Watson, every other quarterback that rotated through there. So you kind of wonder, is he someone, if he gets with the right offensive coordinator, the right quarterback, if maybe he could have some win in the sales that's still there. But the rest of the wide receivers, it's just, you're bringing somebody in. It's a body. You hope you can get, it's like if you can get a veteran in and get 800 yards of production, maybe, you know, 900 yards of production and 5-6 touchdowns, that's a successful signing. It's just, what does the rest of the offense around him look like? You're a young building team. I don't know what a lot of these young, you know, these older guys have to offer to younger teams.
So, Charles, I know this is shocking, but we're waiting on Aaron Rodgers to make some sort of decision here, and it doesn't appear like it's going to be in Minnesota. So how do you view kind of what this now looks like and when we could at some point, I think, hopefully get some sort of resolution on the Aaron Rodgers front?
Okay, so here's my thing with the Vikings. It's not done until – and I wrote this actually yesterday. It's not done until the Vikings sign a veteran backup quarterback, right? Like, it's not – I know everyone wants to say, oh, they're moving off of them. They're moving – I get it. I understand the question they asked, which I think the big conversation – and we may have talked about this last week – is, like, can you bench this guy? Can he step aside for J.J. McCarthy if the moment calls for it? And the answer was no. Like, you know, if you're signing Rodgers, if you're the Minnesota Vikings, you're effectively shelving J.J. McCarthy. You're like, we're putting J.J. on the shelf, and this is going to be a year of development for him again, although he won't be injured, so hopefully we can get him some snaps and maybe some mop-up duty now and then. But that was the big conversation about Rodgers, and I think the Vikings knew we can't go down that path. We can't sign he who is unbenchable, apparently, at this point in his career. Now, that said, they haven't added another quarterback to that room. Brett Rippon is not what they're looking for to be a backup quarterback to J.J. McCarthy. They're looking for an experienced veteran to come in and be a support role player and also available if J.J. gets hurt. And the guy I would probably point at is Carson Wentz, because Wentz spent the 2023 season on the Rams roster, knows that offense that Kevin O'Connell's running. He's the most sensible sort of option in terms of having some experience, knowing the offense, being able to step in, and still having talent at the position if McCarthy were to go down. They haven't made the move to him right at this stage. And so I think that is – to me, it's the door's not closed in Minnesota until they make the move that closes the door. And the next couple of days, and projecting outward, watch Minnesota. Let's see. Do they get involved with some of these veteran backups to go ahead and make that addition? Once they do, Rodgers is definitely out. I think until that happens, I don't know that Rodgers does anything, because I think he wants to be in Minnesota. I think he feels like, I don't have time. Like, why am I pressed? Yeah, the Pittsburgh Steelers need a quarterback. Where are they going? Like, what are the options that are on the table? They don't want Russell Wilson back. There are people in that building that do not want to coach Russell Wilson again. So what's their alternative? Kirk Cousins? Well, Kirk Cousins, you got to trade something to get him, and now you're going to have to pay some more of that salary for the Atlanta Falcons to give him up. The New York Giants. Same situation. You're sitting there and going, okay, well, Russell Wilson's the option with the Giants. Beyond that, what else is out there? So, you know, I mean, the Browns are now courting Russell Wilson because they can't get Kirk Cousins for nothing. So I think Rodgers' situation is he doesn't feel pressed to make any kind of a decision here, number one. And then number two, and this is I will be honest with you, this is speculation, because you talk to people that are close to him historically, they all say the same thing. He's not saying anything this offseason. The guy has been incommunicado with people he normally talks to. And the feeling is whatever's going on from a football perspective, it's Rodgers and his agent David Dunn are the only two people talking about that. He's not sharing it with anybody else like he normally does. That includes Pat McAfee, includes A.J. Hawk. I mean, like I heard like A.J. Hawk's asking people what's going on with Rodgers right now, which says something. And so, you know, but again, I think he's sitting there going, all right, let's see where the Vikings ultimately go with this quarterback situation. If they don't add anybody, that door's still slightly cracked. And if they do add somebody, then Rodgers' decision becomes like, where's my legacy at and how do I want to finish this? And am I finished? I think retirement's on the table. And because New York's a rebuilding situation. He goes and plays for the Giants. It's not, you could argue, honestly, roster for roster, going into the situation you went into last year with the Jets, you could argue the Giants are worse off than the Jets were last year. And the Steelers, I mean, I think it looks enticing. I think, to me, that makes a lot of sense. But I don't know what I have. It's like Looney Tunes between the, you know, what DK Metcalf brings to a locker room, George Pickens brings to a locker room, and then Aaron Rodgers is going to be in there. I mean, you want to see Mike Tomlin lose his mind? Although Mike Tomlin kept Antonio Brown under wraps for years, and we had no idea what was going on there. So maybe to Tomlin, he's like, ah, this is that's middle school stuff. I see the words. No problem. So I don't think this is going to resolve. Personally, I don't think it's going to resolve itself really quickly because teams just don't have anything to press Rodgers right now to make a decision. They can't say, hey, man, you know, either make this decision or we're moving on to what? Russ? Pittsburgh's not, they don't want to move to Russ. He knows that. And the rest of the teams are sitting there going, you're clearly our best option right now. We'll wait.
So you brought up the guy who I was going to ask you about, Charles. So now that we know, obviously, that, you know, Cousins, Atlanta decided to pay the money. Is that with the idea that we are going to get something good for him, someone is going to trade with him, or is it with the idea of, you know what, Penix has an injury history, we still don't know that he's going to be great,
right?
We're not paying him, we are paying Kirk, but now you have actual depth and insurance at QB, which is their preferred path?
I think it's not so much about Penix and the worry about the injury history. I think it's what happened is the Falcons looked outward and they said, we can see there is more quarterback need than quarterbacks available. We're already on the hook for paying this guy $27.5 million in the 2025 season. Why would we cut him and let him go somewhere else and improve some other team on our dime? And the threat of the $10 million roster bonus that gets triggered for 2026 that became guaranteed when they went through the deadline, the way it was put to me is the Falcons are staring outward and they're saying, okay, if Kirk Cousins starts for a team somewhere in 2026, he's going to be making more than $10 million, and we have offset language. So if he makes more than $10 million, we're not on the hook for that $10 million. The salary's offset, and we're fine. We don't pay him anything in 2026, which I think is sound. And then I think when you go beyond the money – they're sitting there saying, well, if we put Kirk somewhere else, we still have to go find another backup quarterback. So what, now we're going to pay Kirk and another backup quarterback on our roster? No, they just said, we're already paying the money. Arthur Blank met with Kirk. Kirk said, I want to go start somewhere else. Arthur expressed, from what I was told, yeah, we're not going to do that. Like, we want to have you on our team. We think you're still valuable. You're a valuable member of, you know, that quarterback room. And I think the Falcons' approach to it is Kirk's not someone who makes waves. Like, he's not going to go out there and throw a fit and become some huge problem, which might change, honestly, their outlook on it. But since he's not, they're like, all right, we'll keep him. And if nobody comes to us, if the Cleveland Browns, who I think they thought the Browns were lining up to sign Kirk, if the Cleveland Browns want to come to us and offer us a draft pick, and maybe we'll pay a little of, or, you know, maybe they'll pay a little of that 2025 salary and we'll pay 20 million of the 27.5. So we recoup a draft pick and we only pay 20 million instead of 27.5 million. They look at that as like a winning strategy in this situation. And if they get quote unquote stuck with Kirk, they just shrug and say, great, we've got an experienced backup who maybe he's even better than he was last year because he's a year removed from the Achilles. I heard that because Kirk had spent so much time and effort working on the Achilles, he didn't have his regular sort of strength program with his arm, and that his arm kind of got tired down the stretch in 2024. If that's factual, it could just be an excuse. But if that's factual, you know, maybe it's actually a better version of Kirk Cousins than they had in 2024. I thought it was unbelievable. I thought they were bluffing all along. And then a few days before the deadline, and I even tweeted this, after I had talked to people on both sides, I was like, oh, this is not happening. They're keeping this guy. This is actually they're going to roll through the Sunday deadline, and he's going to be an Atlanta Falcon. I think he'll remain an Atlanta Falcon unless somebody comes and says, we'll kick you a draft pick and pay a little bit of that 2025 salary. I don't think that changes. And even then, by then, if Kirk really hasn't pressed this issue, they may say it's not even worth the draft pick. We're paying him. He's on the roster. We've allocated the funds. And by the way, the person I'm told who is chiefly behind this is Arthur Blank. I heard it's like almost 100% Arthur Blank is the one saying that he wants to keep Kirk, and he's already, you know, the money spent, we might as well keep him.
Charles, is Sparty going to go win this thing? I've got Michigan State winning in my bracket.
I'm not going to lie. I did the Homer thing. I made Michigan State the winner. In my defense, I will say they did. It's a nice draw for them. I thought the bracket stacked up pretty well for them. They still can't shoot threes, which to me is, I feel like, you know, you always run into teams that are like senior laden and then that can hit three pointers. And those teams end up being the ones that either pull the upset or end your tournament run. So unless they can figure out how to shoot threes, I think that I'm probably stupid and they're not going to win. But I'm not going to lie. I did pick them to win in my bracket. Although I'm in Houston. I really like what Kelvin Sampson does with his teams. I love the way Houston plays defense. I'd love to see a Houston Michigan State final. That'd be sweet. What do you guys think?
What a rock fight would be. What a rock fight.
Yeah, it would be pretty horrible. Two teams just beating the crap out of each other.
I've got Sparty winning. Joe, who do you have winning?
Really?
Yeah.
Now, did you really believe that?
Yeah, I do.
Robbie, you think, yeah?
Yeah. I mean, look, I'm about as much of a college basketball expert as, like, you know, asking me to talk about rocket science. So keep that in mind.
Okay, that's not great. So we can go ahead and move off of this conversation with Robbie. Bracket. Okay, Joe, Joe is the one out of the three of us that actually his bracket probably has most merit. Now, did you pick him to make the Final Four?
I usually just do one thing, but I've just because it's like I got family brackets coming at me. So I've had Auburn and Florida winning, and I've had Auburn and Michigan State in different brackets, but I don't have Michigan State winning. Auburn and Florida are my two champions. So there you go.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's most realistic.
I'm an SEC homer.
I swear. Well, yeah. I mean, come on. We've known that for a while now. I swore I wouldn't get sucked in by them. Like I complain to Joe about Izzo like all the time, and I swore I would never get sucked in by this guy. And yet here we are again. As the season went along, I'm like, God, they got a lot of depth. Like this is
can't escape him.
You know, it's yeah. And then this time of year, even when they lose, the Wisconsin loss in the tournament or the Big Ten tournament, I'm like, all right, that's fine. Like I don't mind. You know, if you're going to suffer it and have to redial. Do it in the conference tournament. So we'll see. It's going to be a lot of fun. I think the way that college basketball stacks up now and the way it feels so wide open, aside from Duke and obviously Cooper Flagg, but you get the Cooper Flagg injury, that kind of changes things. So I will say, what's this, the 25-year anniversary of Michigan State winning their title. And Joe, do you remember the star who got hurt that year that really kind of opened it up for Michigan State to win that year?
Yeah, Kenyon Martin. The Michigan State got that one seed because he broke his leg.
Yep, the number one pick.
We were both there, Charles.
Yep, that's right. Kenyon Martin, the number one pick in the draft, suffered an injury, and that opened up the path, I think, for Michigan State. So Cooper Flagg, I mean, obviously he's going to play. That's what we're being told. But maybe that's the sign, right, Joe? Come on.
We'll see.
Maybe.
Charles, enjoy the basketball. 25
years, man.
Enjoy the basketball. I wish good luck to Sparty on your behalf, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right. I appreciate it, guys. Have a good day.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, our guest on Robbie and Rex Row. We'll react to what Charles had to say coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Row, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.